KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. My name is Mike Hagan. You're listening to Radio Orbit. I'll be back in just a few minutes.
I feel warm, strong, numb. I feel warm, strong, numb.
Way too high up there to feel your hands reaching out for me. Invincible, no need to shift back. My body floating down below me, far from where my mind is at. Did I close my eyes or did the lights go out?
I feel warm, strong, numb. I feel warm, strong, numb.
Already robbed you of your chance to prove me wrong. I found my path, there is no way back. I go straight as an arrow, but haven't hit the bullseye yet. Did you hold my hand or did you hold your breath?
Nothing was real, it just reminded me in front of a blue screen. I grew warm, strong, numb. Now it's all so clear. The walls have disappeared, my eyes are closed. I see a bright, sparkling, better world.
No one has the answers to the questions I forgot. I can't remember why I'm scared to look back. It's so cold where I came from. I think I was somebody else. Did I fall asleep or did I come to life?
I feel warm, strong, numb. I feel warm, strong, numb.
Strange how my thoughts spin around. It's lasted for so long, it makes sense that I'm trusting and turning. I'm warm, strong, numb.
I feel warm.
Nothing is real. It's just you and me in front of a blue screen. I feel warm, strong, numb. Now it's all so clear. The walls have disappeared. My eyes are closed. I see a bright, sparkling, better world.
First, that's Mankind Liberation Front. And this is Mike Hagan. You're listening to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. Good to be with y'all tonight. And, yeah, love the music. Let's see. Thanks to Debbie, first of all, obviously, Free Range Radio Theater, doing King Lear. Going to finish things up next week. And Debbie does it every week at 10 p.m., just an hour before this program. Before her, Kelvin and Jason do it. But Free Range Radio Theater, don't miss it, every week just before this program, okay? Like I said, before her, Kelvin and Jason. Jazz plus blues equals springtime is here. Tech Radio before them, interesting stuff, always keeping us up on the fast-moving world of high technology. Jeff Wheeler starts things off, Uncommon Light, from 3 to 5 p.m. every Monday. Great radio on KOPN, your imagination station. It's a pleasure to be a part of it, and I'm glad you're all with me tonight, okay? All right, thanks to everyone who listened to the program last week, and wow, a big old monumental thank you to Dr. Jose Arguelles. Absolutely remarkable, amazing stuff being shared by Jose. New ways to visualize time and history, actually old ways, you know, but new understanding for sure. All this stuff, you know, we're in the middle of a dark age, and all these things are being rediscovered. Rediscovered. You know? Well, they say there's nothing new under the sun, right? Well, we're learning about that. Anyway, new ways to visualize time and history, the Maya, how important they were, the galactic core, the so-called Hunab-Ku, the central sun, the maturation of the noosphere, the nuosphere. What does it all mean? Who's to say? I don't know. But something is going on this planet that is not being talked about, much less understood, by the great, great majority of folks living on her. And, you know, nobody understands what's going on as far as I'm concerned. Everybody has sort of their own take. But when somebody shows up that knows exactly what's going on, well, I usually head for the door. But at any rate, Jose Arguelles certainly sharing lots of valuable information and stuff that's being brought to light now that has not been in the light for a long, long time. All right? Anyway, you know, this nuosphere idea, there were people that had questions. I got a number of emails about the noosphere. And I guess I just want to say really quickly what my impression of what the thing is supposed to be. It's sort of just an evolution of the geosphere originally. They had the idea of the geosphere, which is basically the planet and inanimate matter, if you believe that there is such a thing. But anyway, the idea of rocks and, you know, whatever, you know, just stuff that wasn't alive, basically. And in the idea that this guy, I forget his first name, but Jose Arguelles mentioned him last week. His name was Vernadsky. He was a Russian theoretician and a Russian scientist who was remarkable, actually. And Jose Arguelles and some other people actually borrow from him and or build on his work or use his work in their own explanations. But at any rate, the noosphere, first of all, it was Pierre Teilhard de Chardin, speaking of Jesuits, we're going to be talking about Jesuits tonight, but Chardin was a Jesuit priest, and he's credited with this idea of the noosphere, but he wasn't the first guy. There was another guy before him, and I forget who it was a German guy, and Arguelles talks about it in one of his books, in Earth Ascending, I think, and I'm sorry, you know, I don't write this stuff down, but at any rate, he wasn't the first guy, but there's never really a first guy. Somebody always says it before you. And at any rate, the noosphere can be seen as sort of the sphere of human mentation, mental ideas, thought, that is in the shape of a sphere that surrounds the planet. You know, Jose last week talked about the idea that the internet was sort of a virtual noosphere, this idea of minds being connected via this web, albeit technological in nature, but it was a way to communicate essentially in real time with anyone, anywhere. And that's what we're doing tonight, as a matter of fact. You know, we do it on the radio and we do it over the web, and there are people listening all over the place. And then there's a little bit of a lag time there, a few seconds or whatever, but for the most part, you know, we're talking through the virtual noosphere. And Arguelles' idea is that this is going to go biological, that the noosphere, when it is actually completed or birthed or whatever the correct verb is, I don't know, that this will now become, you know, a part of daily life where people could actually communicate with anybody, anywhere, just through the power of their own thought. And that becomes a very strange idea when you really grok what it means, you know, the implications thereof. Because it becomes, well, just to use your imaginations, all right? At any rate, the biosphere comes next, okay? You got the geosphere, then the biosphere, and then the next phase is the noosphere. And this is, you know, sort of along the ideas of this guy Vernadsky and Gaian theorists like Lovelock. And, you know, I mean, there are lots of people that are talking this way these days. But at any rate, we have all these different ideas of spheres around the planet. The atmosphere, the biosphere. We always talk about the hemispheres, this side of the planet or that. But anyway, the noosphere is essentially this idea of another step up in that progression. All right? And again, Chardin was the guy that gets credited for it, but... he wasn't the guy that actually said it first, I don't think. He talked about the Omega Point and all this stuff, that that history actually had a goal, the idea of teleology, which is, you know, fretted upon if you're in science. You know, if you talk about the universe, with actually a sentient universe that actually has, you know, some sort of a purpose, well, my God, you know, you're just immediately thrown out and stoned. But, you know, many of the great thinkers in the past, and not that far past, you know, actually believe that. And we're going to talk about a few of them actually tonight, because it's a special night, as a matter of fact, tonight, but as they all are these days. But anyway, let's get back to business here, okay? The noosphere, go check it out if you want to figure it out for yourself. Read some Arguelles, go on the web, get on the virtual noosphere and learn about it. But last week we heard good music as well. My friends in Colorado, great new band, actually not that new, but new to us. Canal. Lots of people liked the music last week, which was a thrill for me. I can't tell you how often I do a show and I totally dig the music, and only to find out later that many of my listeners thought it sucked. You know? And anyway, I wish my musical tastes were more suited to all the listeners, but you know, I have to sort of engage myself, and I try to do stuff that that makes sense to me to match with the programs. And, well, you know, if you don't like it, you got the interviews to sort of fall back on. You can always fast forward through the tunes. All right? But if you do like them, you can check them out as well. And if you missed it, any of it, the talk with Dr. Arguelles last week or the sounds of Canal, all on the web, www.mikehagan.com, in the program archives. All right? Just go check it out for yourselves. Share it if you think it warrants. Okay, tonight... we dive deeply, as a matter of fact, into the conspiracy mix. A grand one it is. In, let's see, under an hour, what, about 45 minutes, we'll welcome Eric John Phelps to the program, the author of Vatican Assassins. If you want conspiracy, this is the Grand Dame. So stick around, all right? Eric John Phelps in 45 minutes. If you're curious or unfamiliar with his work, you can visit Eric's site on the World Wide Web. The virtual noosphere. I'll be saying that all night, apparently. www.vaticanassassins.org. And if you don't know how to spell assassins, A-S-S-A-S-S-I-N-S. Vaticanassassins.org. He has a book by the same name, which I read a few years ago. And I don't know. You know, whether it's all true, I cannot tell you. But I can tell you that certainly some of it is true. And I say that based on my experiences in and with the Catholic Church over the first 25 years or so of my life. But either way, in just a bit, Eric John Phelps, okay, the author of Vatican Assassins, will also have some great music tonight from Mankind Liberation Front. You just heard a song there that we opened the show with that's called Warm, Strong, and Numb. I love it. And... we'll hear more from them, well, probably right now, okay? Again, Mankind Liberation Front. What's the name of the CD? They're on Reality Entertainment. I'll take my glasses off. I got to get the laser surgery or something because like, I have to wear glasses to see the damn computer screen. But then if I want to look up close at you know, the liner notes of a CD, then I got to throw the things on the damn table. All right. This is called Around and Around. And yeah, Mankind Liberation Front, the album, is called Automind. Check it out. Back in a minute. It's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia. Around and Around, that's Mankind Liberation Front. It's Mike, you listen to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. Earth Day volunteers, call us. We need help for Earth Day. All right, 874-1139. That's the way to do it. Talk to Julie or Jules or someone else here at the station. But if you want to help out for Earth Day, it's going to be great, good times. And I don't even know when it is. April... what, 20th? Something like that. But at any rate, get involved. It'll be fun. Good music and lots of people down there and just a whole nexus of stuff going on. So it'll be down at Peace Park again, I think, this year. Anyway, call us, 874-1139. Get involved in Peace. Well, listen, my Freudian slip is showing. Get involved in Peace. Get involved in Earth Day. And maybe peace will come from that somehow. Who knows? I digress. All right. Hello. It's Mike, and it is Radio Orbit. Thanks to everyone listening to us this evening on KOPN or over the Internet, live or otherwise. Every Monday we broadcast the show from the lovely studios here at KOPN, downtown Columbia, Missouri, and stream the show live on the Internet, kopn.org. Wonderful stuff going on KOPN all the time. Put it on your favorites and your radio bookmarks if you have that sort of thing. But check us out on the web, kopn.org. And when you go there, just click on the Listen Live button. There's a wonderful 64K stream. And you can also hear this program, Radio Orbit, on the web at cosmicwavesradio.com. And thanks to everyone who makes it possible at KOPN and at Cosmic Waves, on the radio, on the net, Thanks to Larry the Web Wizard, as always. Hope to have him back with us soon. He's busy, but I speak with him often. He's just not able to be as involved maybe as he'd like to right now. Okay, but anyway, he'll be with us. Don't you worry. Thanks as well to all the people out there sending music, poetry, art, all that stuff. I'm going to read a poem tonight from E.E. Cummings, which was sent to me in email. And it's a great poem, and I was looking for something to read for the springtime like I always do. And anyway, I'll probably put that up in the Poets Corner after the program. At any rate, it's awesome, and I appreciate it. And send more, more, more. All right, we'll find a place for it on the site, and we'll share it with other people. All right, check it out, and let us know what you think. Go over to the web, the website at MikeHagan, HAGAN.com. You'll have access to everything that we're doing over there. So take a look-see, all right? Share your thoughts with me as well. It's easy to get a hold of us. The forum is busy. There's a bulletin board forum that I always talk about. There's always interesting stuff being talked about, being discussed and debated or fretted over or laughed about, but more stuff than I can keep up with these days, but it's great stuff, and I appreciate all the people that contribute over there and that are becoming a part of that community, which is what it is. And, well, there's a live chat room up and active right now, too. And, you know, the chat room is up all the time. You can go out there and talk with one another, whether the show is going or not. But certainly right now, there's some people there in the chat room. I'd like to say hello to everybody over there. And I'll peek in there as we move through the show tonight for questions, comments. Feel free to put your stuff up there. And I encourage guests as well as listeners to join us in both those places, in the chat room and the forum. It's a great way to interact with, you know, like-minded people, and certainly a way to interact with people who can take a look at your ideas and give you a straight-faced and unbiased answer about what they think about them. You know, there's no real reason not to. You know, and the people that are doing this sort of stuff, at least over at my site, you know, are good-hearted, honest people that are just sort of speaking their mind, and that's what it's all about. All right. If you want to get a hold of me directly on the web, you can do it at MikeHagan.com. If you want to send me an email, orbitradio, O-R-B-I-T-R-A-D-I-O, orbitradio at AOL.com. You can send me email. I appreciate it. I always respond. That tells you that I don't get that much. That doesn't surprise me. guests and musicians as well appreciate your communication. You know, so if somebody says something you like or you don't like, get in touch with them. That's what the web's about. The ability to communicate back and forth. It's a two-way street. All right. So, you know, I'm speaking one way right now out to you guys and girls, and I appreciate it, and so do my guests and musicians and everybody else, to hear back from you if you like it or if you don't. You know, it's not that hard these days to do it. It used to be you had to get out a pen and paper, write a letter, get an envelope, find an address, get a stamp, blah, 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 walk to the post office. You know, even that was sort of fun, but now it's just point and click. You know, it's not that hard. Anyway, all right, that's the way to do it. And if you want to call me here at the station, 573-874-5676, that's when we go to break. And the phone lines when we take calls with listeners and guests is 573-443-8255. All right? And if you're outside of, well, I think in the state of Missouri there's an 800 number. 800-895-5676, but that's not to get on the air. That's just to sort of call the studio here. So, at any rate, you know, the chat room is a great way to get in touch during the show, too. All right? Okay, tonight, like I said, Eric John Phelps, the author of Vatican Assassins. You can find him on the web and check that stuff out beforehand at vaticanassassins.org. Next week is the 2nd of April. We'll do something special in honor of the passing of my friend Terrence McKenna. 4-9, the 9th of April, Kent Stedman. We haven't talked to Kent in a while, so we'll have the Bard back on the air. After that, sort of up in the air right now, there are a few guests that were just piddling around with dates. One who I'm very excited about named Richard Allen Miller, and Richard will be with us in the next few weeks for sure. Gary David, I mentioned him last week, a guy who's writing about Orion, the constellation Orion, and the relationship to the Hopi people. Dr. Richard Tarnas, the author of Cosmos and Psyche, also the author of, what was his first book? The Passion of the Western Mind. Passion of the Western Mind, and now his most recent book, Cosmos and Psyche. Richard Tarnas, Dr. Richard Tarnas. And I can't wait to have him on the program. He's got a wonderful view of what's happening and a new sort of way to look at the world and the cosmos around us. And again, an old world way as well. Paul Laffoley, backed by popular demand. Paul Laffoley, the amazing artist from Massachusetts who we spoke to back in February. He'll be on the program on the 21st of May. May 21st, Paul Laffoley. I can't wait to have Paul back on the air. He's so freaking cool. All right. Susan Weed, I'm trying. I know everybody wants me to talk to her, but I have yet to get in touch with her. B. Wilson, this woman who wrote a book called The Hive. I'm trying to get in touch with her to talk about the honeybees and what's happening with the honeybees. If you heard Jose and I last week, we spoke a little bit about the problem with the honeybee population, not only in this country, but around the world. Something very strange is happening with honeybees. And that's a big deal because they pollinate a lot of things. And as usual, with the natural world, we take a lot of things for granted, and we don't understand things fully. And here's another wonderful, glaring example of that. And, you know, it's funny because when I do the news later, if we have some time, I brought a couple of magazines from the house with me. I get this magazine, this print magazine called New Scientist. And it comes out weekly, as a matter of fact. And it's a great magazine. It's about as fringe as you'll get in the mail and still get any sort of respect. You know, there are people that are writing and being presented in New Scientist that are, you know, of reputable institutions and all this sort of stuff. But it's cutting-edge stuff for sure as far as what we think is, the state of the art. Who knows what's really the state of the art? You know, who knows what's under the guises of, the black budget. But I don't even want to talk about that right now. Forget about that. I mean, you can just imagine. But if you look at New Scientist, you'll see how schizophrenic science has become. And, I mean, if you don't think there's a crisis in science, just read New Scientist every week. Because you'll see the latest, greatest theory of cosmology touted every week. I mean, every week there's a new something, and you know each theory holds as much water as the last. You know, maybe a little. And it's amazing. At the same time, as the ideas of cosmology are breaking down and being shown to be nonsensical for the most part, and of course it makes sense because, you know, we look around the world that we live in and we don't understand what's happening here. And it is so strange and schizophrenic to imagine that this place that we have the most pertinent and heavy amount of data, you know, our own experience here on planet Earth, this is the place where we have the biggest set of data from what happens here on this planet. And we have no idea what's happening on this planet. And somehow we take these little bits of data then somehow, far less than we have information about our own world, and we somehow extrapolate, you know, the workings of the universe. It is absolute silliness. And eventually, more people will realize this, I hope, and it will bring science back to do the business of science, actually help the freaking world. You know, do something worthwhile. Particle physics is not helping anyone, all right? The search for the so-called God particle, there's a silly story in New Scientist this week about the God particle. What the hell does that mean? They don't even know. Some particle is somehow supposed to define and describe my love life or something, you know, or my relationship to my dog or to the planet? It's ridiculous, right? It's just another little particle. They'll find a zillion little whiz-bangs, as many as they want to find, and they can put all kinds of different names on them. It's just words. It's just more words. It's just language, you know? Whatever. In the meantime, they're developing and manufacturing all kinds of outrageous things, which is great. I mean, I think. Who knows? I mean, it's completely out of control. Nobody knows what anyone is doing. But I guess that's a good thing. I've always thought that the idea that someone was in control is a bad thing because it ain't me. And if it ain't you, well, you know, That's no good. And I guess we'll be talking about that tonight with Eric John Phelps, the idea of control, you know, and conspiracy theory and who's really in control, or is anyone really in control? Certainly people vying for control. I've always been, you know, I've always thought about conspiracy theory as, well, yeah, sure, there's plenty of conspiracy. The world is made of conspiracy. All you got to do is be paying attention. And these days you can find out as much as you like. It'll make your head spin, and it'll make you, you know, want to throw up and all kinds of different things in the meantime, and cry, and, you know, want to run away to a cave with your family. But, you know, you can get through it and then realize that it's just the way the world has always worked. Just nobody ever knows about it. You know, people just don't like to think this way. But the world is full of conspiracy and people and groups vying for control. But that's a far cry from saying that they actually have control. And there's a big power struggle going on, sure. And many of the powerful are people who are unnamed for the most part. Not the people you see on the tube, you know. But whether there's one group that's running the whole business, I don't think so. Because I'm a big believer in the butterfly effect. And the butterfly effect means that very small things, very small perturbations in gigantic systems can cause enormous and significant, improbable and unpredictable results. And so if you believe in an overarching conspiracy theory that says they control everything, you have to believe that they control the small things. And they do not control the small things, like when and where I decide to urinate, for example. They don't control that. Not yet, at least. Don't count on it. All right? So anyway, back to business here. I don't know, what the heck were we talking about? Guests coming up on the program. And another great guest that I'm hoping to have soon, Patrick Flanagan, Dr. Patrick Flanagan, will talk about alternative energy. And speaking of designing all kinds of interesting gadgetry, this guy's doing all kinds of stuff, as are so many people. And it's happening all around you. And it's an amazing thing to be a part of. Who knows where the heck it's going? I mean, it's just outrageous what's happening right now. All right, let's see. It's about 25 minutes until midnight on the 26th of March, 2007. Happy spring to you. Let's talk about a couple of people real fast. Johann Wolfgang von Goethe, one of my spirit guides, as a matter of fact, I think. An amazing writer and a German poet and a painter and a scientist and, you know, just a literary giant. Just did so many wonderful things that it's hard to actually put your finger on any particular thing. But he was a German, of course, and wrote Faust, if you want to think of probably his most enduring work, perhaps. It's a dramatic poem, two parts, Faust. And he did many, many other things. But he was also, you know, a great philosopher. Somebody who I was re-familiarized with when I got involved with Stephen Herod Buhner, and was reading a lot of his work and his material. He loves to draw from Goethe. And, well, he should. You know, this guy's a giant with great, great ideas. And one of the key figures in literature in Germany and in the West in general in the 18th and early 19th century, coinciding, you know, supposedly with the Enlightenment, although I've yet to be convinced that the Enlightenment isn't still before us. At any rate, Johann Wolfgang von Goethe, he died on the 22nd of March, 1832. Here's to him. Joseph Campbell. Man, talk about your spirit guides. Talk about amazing, amazing individuals who should never, ever be forgotten. Joseph Campbell, born on the 26th of March, 1904, would have been 103 years old today. And he was a professor at Sarah Lawrence College for many, many years, a wonderful writer and a wonderful speaker and storyteller. Knew more about mythology, comparative mythology, from around this entire planet than anyone, I think, before him or since. And maybe that's an overstatement, because, you know, you can't know the work of everyone, but certainly Joseph Campbell up there with the greats when it came to looking at other cultures with an unbiased lens, comparing the works that built those cultures, and then really showing people what it was all about, and being able to tell the stories, which is what mythology is, you know, the telling of stories. And man, could Joe Campbell tell a story? So he was wonderful. And if we had more time, I'd play a piece. I might do it next week. Maybe I'll play a short clip from Joseph Campbell next week. We'll see. At any rate, happy birthday, Joe. March 26, 1904. And he was wonderful. Joseph John Campbell. Here's to him. Wilhelm Reich. On the 24th of March, 1987, he died. And he was, you know, a psychiatrist, you know, a Freudian psychiatrist who was greatly respected for much of his life, but then he went out on the fringe and eventually was considered, you know, a heretic, and the establishment pretty much figured he had gone astray and even talked that he had become ill. But he had some very interesting ideas, and he's another one of these people that deserves at least investigation. Wilhelm Reich talked a lot about human sexuality, talked about what he called orgastic potency, orgone energy. He built these trippy things called orgone accumulators, and he had all kinds of strange equipment that not that much unlike Nikola Tesla. Somehow these guys are related and were doing similar work, tapping into similar energies, although I'm not sure anybody really understood or understands what those things were. I think, you know, but they were clearly, to me, somehow involved in similar work. Reich was a German and was living in Germany, as a matter of fact, when Hitler and the gang took over, and he was considered a Jew. So he boogied out of there. He made it over here to the States, and he was very well received. But then eventually, and there's a lot of conspiracy wrapped around, you know, the demise of Wilhelm Reich, but eventually the FDA began to investigate him, and he was trying to sell, you know, certain stuff like everybody does. I mean, that's the way of the West, right? Is to invent something and sell it. So anyway, that's all he was trying to do. They didn't like what he was trying to sell, apparently. And eventually he was put in jail, believe it or not, and spent, or at least was sentenced to a couple years in a federal prison. And in 1956, tons of his publications were burned by FDA agents. And he died of heart failure in prison not long after that, a little over a year later, before he was supposed to apply for parole, as if he, you know, deserved to be there in the first place. At any rate, Wilhelm Reich, all right, another person to check out. Okay, space weather, let's do this really quick. Aurora watch. If you're in the north, Scandinavia, Alaska, auroras tonight, tomorrow probably. Earth is entering a big solar wind stream, and maybe a geomagnetic storm will result. You'll have lovely viewing up there if it happens, okay? There was a wonderful solar eclipse last week. We talked about it a little bit. Imagery now on the web, if you want to see it, spaceweather.com. In particular, check out this Japanese probe that's called Hinode, H-I-N-O-D-E. And it was pretty cool because this spacecraft flew right through the path of the eclipse in totality from Earth orbit, and took some very interesting and cool pictures. The sun looks alive, boy, I tell you that much. Anyway, I love it. All right, last week, the equinox. And now, just a few days into spring. And, you know, it's already apparent here in mid-Missouri. Doesn't take much. Just a few days of warmth, and off they go. The critters, the plants, all getting ready to do the dance, if they're not already doing it. Beautiful stuff, and I love it. It's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit. I'll be back. KOPN Columbia. Spontaneous earth, how often have the doting fingers of prurient philosophers pinched and poked thee? Has the naughty thumb of science prodded thy beauty? How often have religions taken thee upon their scragging knees, squeezing and buffeting thee that thou might conceive gods? But true to the incomparable couch of death, thy rhythmic lover, thou answereth them only with spring. Go. How about that? KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. You know, I had to run back from the bathroom. They always do this in radio stations. They put the bathroom as far away as possible from the studio. They can never have a bathroom close to the studio. You always have to run, you know, a quarter of a block when you hear the CD skipping, trying to zip your pants or something. Anyway, I digress. It's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit. And, well, it is about 12 minutes before midnight on the 26th of March. And Eric John Phelps will be with us in just about 12 minutes. We've got a few minutes to talk about some things that are in the news, and I'll do that here in a second. But I want to mention Eric's website real fast because you've got a few minutes still to jump over there and read a little bit, get a leg up on people if they haven't been familiar with some of the work that Eric is doing or has been doing for quite a long time. You can do that on the web at Vatican Assassins, V-A-T-I-C-A-N, Assassins, A-S-S-A-S-S-I-N-S, VaticanAssassins.org. And pretty serious stuff that Eric is writing about and talking about. He has a book of the same name. And we'll talk with him in just about 10 minutes here, okay? All right, let's see. What's going on the forum here? Permaculture. Yeah, I've had a few people ask to do a show on permaculture, and I don't know that much about it. I know it has to do with new farming techniques and this sort of thing, and I'm all for that. I think that primarily you better figure out how to do things yourself, though, first, and then decide if you want to build a culture around it or get involved with another culture that's doing it. But you know, I'm not a big fan of just jumping into, you know, some other culture, whatever kind of culture it is. Culture's, you know, I'm not a fan of culture to begin with. I think of culture in like the scientific sense, you know. If you're going to culture something, you know, if you're going to do it like in a petri dish, that's the way I think of culture, you know, in the world, like where we live. That's why I don't like it, because when you make a culture in the laboratory sense, you have to separate it from everything else. You have to separate it from everything else. Otherwise, your culture is no good, you see. And that's the business of culture, to separate you from everyone else and tell you that your business here, that's the one, baby. Everybody else, no, you know. And every culture is doing the same thing. They all separate themselves, and that's the whole business of dividing and ruling and all this other crap that's been going on, you know, for thousands of years, which we may or may not be coming to an end of. Who knows? I certainly don't. But certainly it's clear now what's been going on for those who are paying attention. Maybe not all the answers. In other words, I don't expect to say, yeah, this is exactly what's happening. But you can get a general sense of what's happening, you know, and know that, you know, you certainly can know when you're being fed a line. I mean, people should know now that they're not getting the truth from their leaders. I mean, if nothing else, why would anyone ever assume that they're getting the truth from their leaders? Talk about crack-brained. Talk about schizophrenic and cognitively dissonant. Imagine if you had a relationship, you know, with your significant other, man or a woman who you loved, right? And you're intimate or whatever, you know, you love them. And they lie to you all the time. What do you do? Your first time, please don't lie to me anymore, you know, and I'm willing to work with you, right? They keep lying all the time about big stuff, right? Pretty soon you kick them out. You say, I don't want any part of you in my life ever again, right? Yet the so-called leaders, it's not even a matter of having to prove something. All you got to do is, like, read the comics. I mean, people make jokes on the street every day about how, of course, these people cannot be telling the truth. Politicians never tell the truth. Everyone knows it. It's no big news. Well, then why do you believe a word they say? Why do you put faith in any of them? Why do you put faith in any of their institutions? Why do you not kick their ass out of town or out of the state or out of the federal government? Because people don't give a damn. As long as they're fed and got their television and their wallet has a few bucks in it, you know? What did the Romans call it? Bread and circuses, right? Keep people fed and occupied, entertained, and they pretty much won't bug you. And that's what's going on. It's been going on for a long time. But, you know, people should at least recognize that it's going on. I don't claim to have answers or anything, but, I mean, it's obvious that, you know, it's one thing to be in the middle of something and recognize it. You know, it's another to be in the middle of it and have no clue what's happening. It's important to at least recognize what the hell is happening, you know, in your own world. Or try. Anyway, what the hell got that going? Permaculture. Here you go. Scientists have created the world's first human sheep chimera. This is a hybridization experiment where they made a sheep that has a bunch of, that's part human. Check this out. Scientists have created the world's first human sheep chimera, which has the body of a sheep and half human organs. And they don't mean the ones like with pipes that you play in church. The sheep have 15% human cells and 85% animal cells, and their evolution brings the prospect of animal organs being transplanted into humans one step closer. Professor Ismail Zanjani of the University of Nevada has spent 7 years and £5 million, there you go, perfecting the technique. Give me that $5 million, man. And 7 years. Give me $5 million. I challenge anyone out there, give me £5 million English and 7 years, and I'll do more than clone a sheep. Okay? You mark my words. I'll do more than make a sheep that has silly organs in it. All right, what else? Oh, God, I don't know. 5 minutes to the hour. So let's hear another song here. And hope it doesn't skip. And then we'll come back with Eric John Phelps, okay, at the top of the hour. VaticanAssassins.org. Very interesting, provocative material. If you want conspiracy stuff, this is it. And if you want to hear an interesting historian tell a story from his point of view, you can hear that too. Eric knows a lot about history. That is for sure. All right, we'll be back with him in about 5 minutes. In the meantime, one more here from Mankind Liberation Front. It's Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia.
Colored cocktail down this desolate beach, counting To Radio Orbit with Mike Hagen on KOPN 89.5 FM.
Everybody, hi, it's Mike. I'm back at you here just after the stroke of midnight. My guest tonight, his name is Eric John Phelps. He's an author and an historian and a man who knows a whole lot about the history of the Catholic Church. We're going to learn a little bit more about Eric himself and the work and writings that he's been doing now for some time, and we're going to do it right now and say good evening and hello and welcome and thank you, Eric John Phelps.
A pleasure to be with you, Mike, and your listeners.
Pleasure to have you here, Eric. Thanks very much. All right, look, let's start off for the people who aren't familiar, and myself included, and a little bit of background framework on yourself so we know sort of a little bit about the person whose views we're going to hear tonight. So tell us a little bit about you and how you got interested in all this business with the Vatican and the Jesuit order and everything that we're going to be talking about.
Okay. I was born and raised in California, and I had never had any Bible training at all. I was an atheist. And
what part of Cali?
I was raised near San Pablo. I went to Pinole Valley High. So after I went to the Air Force, I came to know the Lord and began to read the Bible. And then I went to Bible college after I got out of the Air Force. And it was there that I was confronted with the power of the Jesuit order in their assassination of Lincoln. I had a class on it by one of my teachers, history profs.
What was the nature of the Bible study course? In other words, with what denomination?
Historically, a Baptist.
Baptist, okay.
Calvinist.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So they were giving classes on the assassination of John Kennedy.
No, Lincoln.
Of Abraham Lincoln. Okay, I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm jumping ahead, of course, aren't I?
Okay. And when I was 10. When Kennedy was killed, I was in the fourth grade, and that deeply affected me. And then when I was in Bible college, they were beginning to replace the King James Bible and its underlying Greek text, the Text of Receptus, with West Cottonhort text or Bruce Metzger's third edition of the critical text, which is Prodrome's Latin Vulgate. And the Latin Vulgate is what the Jesuits called the Scriptures in their Council of Trent. So these three issues, the Bible, the assassination of Lincoln, and the assassination of Kennedy, caused me to begin to dig in this topic. And as far as the Jesuit power, and that led to their power in World War II, and what I call in my book the Second 30 Years War from 1914 to 45, and their ultimate control of the Cold War on every side, and now their control of the crusade against Islam, by bringing down the World Trade Center on 9/11 and blaming it on Muslims.
All right, let's talk a little bit about the historical stuff first. Okay, how far back does the Jesuit order actually go? In other words, when was it founded, I guess is a good way to put it.
They were first founded by Ignatius Loyola in 1534.
And this was something that came out of the Council of Trent?
No, the Council of Trent is after.
Okay. So in 15...
34.
Now, was there a precursor? And a lot of times, you know, they were called something else earlier.
Yes.
Okay.
Knights Templars.
The Knights Templars. And that goes how far back?
Goes back to the Crusades in the 12th century. They were the big bankers of Europe.
The Templars were.
The Templars were, yes. And so the Jesuit order became an extreme group of soldiers because it's called the company. It's called the militia. And therefore, since it's a military company, it sets forth to conquer the world for the Pope and restore all governments to the Pope's what's called his temporal or his political power.
So that's sort of their charter or something?
That's their charter.
And is that it written anywhere?
Oh, my, yes, it's in their oath. I quoted several places in my book. Mm-hmm. I show that their whole purpose was, according to Wiley, in his great work, History of Protestantism, in 1878, that the purpose of the Jesuits was to take Jerusalem from the Muslims, which is why Loyola went there before he really founded the order, and then the second purpose was to destroy the Protestant Reformation and bring all nations back to feudalism or the Dark Ages, where the Pope ruled the kings, the dictators, and the people then were submitted to the dictators and the kings.
Hmm. All right, so in 1534, though, something changes. They actually get the official title of the Jesuit order or somehow, and they're supposedly under the purview of the Pope?
Well, this happens in 1540. They were first known as the Knights of the Virgin Mary.
And they're an army, you're telling people. In other words, most people would think about, you know, the Jesuits, certainly not as military people. And, I mean, there are schools. I have friends that went to Creighton University. I have friends that went to Loyola, actually, in Chicago. You know, I mean, there are Jesuit schools, including high schools and this sort of thing all over the place.
Right.
Do the people that are attending all the schools realize that this is a military situation?
No, not usually.
Hmm.
They don't study the power of the Jesuit order or its purposes.
So they go to a Jesuit school without really knowing anything about the Jesuits.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm.
But the men of power that have gone to Jesuit institutions, like Bill Clinton and Lyndon Johnson and George J. Tenet and others, they know that the purpose of the Jesuits is to use their graduates to man the government so that the graduates will govern on behalf of the Jesuit order. For example, Prescott Bush Sr. was trained by Jesuits at Stonyhurst in England, and so was his son, George Herbert Walker Bush, before they went to Yale and joined Skull and Bones.
They were trained where? In England, you said?
In England by the Jesuits at Stonyhurst College.
Oh, is that a prep school or something like that?
No, that's probably one of their foremost schools in all of England.
Really?
The Jesuit provincial resides there. The provincial really controls the Archbishop of Westminster, and the provincial really controls the Queen. I have a picture of the Queen curtsying to the provincial at Stonyhurst.
Hmm. Picture's worth a thousand words, huh?
Mm-hmm. And that's why in my book I have 760 pictures and portraits.
Yeah, I have your book, and I heard you on Jeff Rentz, I think, years ago. I'm not sure exactly when, but it was before I was even doing radio. But I bought your book, and I'll tell people about this too. You should check this out. You can go on the website and read a little bit because you actually put a lot of the material on the web. But when I don't know if you're still doing it, but when I got the book, you included a CD-ROM with it that had a whole bunch of old text from these books from like the 1800s and stuff that were no longer under copyright, it was no longer an issue. And I mean, do you remember what I'm talking about? There were 10 or 12 of them or something, and they were, I mean, those things were just remarkable. And your book itself was just sort of in many ways a dissolution. I shouldn't say that. It was more like a distillation of a lot of that stuff, where you brought a lot of that old work and put it all in one place.
Yes. And I also felt that for me to have the work out there and be considered credible, that I had to have these 13 old books as a background.
So yeah, for reference.
So I had several histories on it. I have the Black Pope, which is very difficult to find by M.F. Cusack. She was a nun. And I have a Nicolini Sister of the Jesuits. I have the Engineer Corps of Hell, which is very, very difficult to find. And so when the reader reads those works of the 1800s, as you go into the 1900s, you see, well, my. No wonder the Jesuits controlled Theodore Roosevelt, and we begin our Holy Roman 14th Amendment American Empire.
Hmm. All right. More about history. The Council of Trent is a big deal. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about that.
Okay, the Council of Trent was...
When was it, first of all?
1545 to 1563.
Okay, so an 18-year...
18 years.
Okay.
And it was during the Council of Trent that the foremost Jesuit there, Diego Linares, who ultimately would become the Jesuit general, he was the one who oversaw and made sure that all the doctrines of the Reformation were condemned. So they put the Reformers and the Reformed nations, the Lutherans, the Reformed, the Anglicans, they put them under in excess of 100 curses. Accursed be all heretics who believe justification by faith alone. Accursed be all heretics who do not believe in the literal body and blood of the host. So it's a document that is the foundation of the papacy and the documents of Vatican II. The Pope has to swear allegiance to enforce the Council of Trent.
All right, let's talk a little bit about the Reformation for people who aren't familiar with what the Protestant Reformation was and why this is such a big deal.
Okay. The Reformation was the result of getting the Bible into the hands of the common man. Because during the Dark Ages, approximately 600 AD to 1517, approximately 1,000 years, the Bible was a forbidden book. Rome forbade anybody to read it, and anybody who would read it was accursed, and they would suffer the death penalty in horrible manners. The Edict of 1550, put forth by Philip II, was horrible. The women would be buried alive, and the men would be burned alive if they were found reading the Bible in their homes. So as a result of the Bible getting in the hands of the people and being translated into the quote-unquote vulgar tongue, the people realized that all they needed was the Lord Jesus Christ. You know, the Bible says there's one mediator between God and men, the man Christ Jesus. And so they didn't need the priests. They didn't need the Pope anymore. So their spiritual power is broken. And subsequently then, their temporal power is broken. And that resulted in the Jesuits motivating their Habsburg emperors and others to declare war on Protestant nations, like the Dutch War of 80 Years, the Civil War for 80 years that they put upon the Dutch people, and then the 30 Years' War from 1618 to 1648, and it's agreed upon by most historians that the modern era begins in 1648, and the Dark Ages ended. So we enjoy science, we enjoy freedom of conscience, we enjoy freedom of speech. All these things defended by the Reformers and the doctrines that they preached, which enabled whole nations to become prosperous in the beginning of the middle class and the high artistic accomplishments of men like Bach and Rembrandt. And so the Reformation gave birth to tremendously high cultures in Europe.
You know, I mentioned Johann Wolfgang von Goethe, whose birthday was actually on the 26th of actually I take that back. He died on the 22nd of March in 1832, and I don't know. It just reminds me of the same sort of idea. He certainly had those things going for him.
Well, Germany became, as a result of being the foremost Protestant nation in Europe, it became the heart of high technology. It was the first to invent the steam engine. Their crystal is the greatest. The Germans really brought in high technology and accomplishment in the arts. Of course, you have all the other composers that they had the freedom to compose. Then you ultimately have the Second Protestant Reich, created in 1871 after the Franco-Prussian War, after the Jesuits attempted to use France to destroy Protestant Prussia.
How, for example, would they do such a thing?
to set out to destroy a nation?
Yeah. Well, give me an idea of the methodology, for example, in that case, in the Prussian situation.
Okay. The Jesuits controlled Napoleon III and his queen. Napoleon III declared war on Protestant Prussia and wanted Austria on its side, which was Catholic, and Bavaria. And Bavaria, of course, didn't join, and neither did Austria. And so the French were left to fight this war, excuse me, and they were stoutly defeated within a few months at Sedan. So the way the Jesuits set out to overthrow a nation that they target is they get control of the leaders, they brainwash them into their ideologies that it's no murder to kill a heretic, things like that, and then these people set out and start their wars, and their wars of annihilation. And as you look for the Jesuit connection to these leaders and emperors and kings, there is a pattern that develops that further sustains the veracity of the Jesuit oath and the Council of Trent.
Did the oath come from the Council of Trent?
No, the oath was before that. Loyola was a military man.
And this is the full name of this individual?
It is Ignatius Loyola.
Okay.
And he has a larger name, but we'll just leave it to that one.
All right, Ignatius Loyola. Mm-hmm.
And Ignatius Loyola was a Spaniard. He was a military man. He was a cavalier. He was of the noble house of Loyola. And he was in a battle with the French at Pamplona, and he was hit in his leg with a cannonball, shattered his leg. And the French, because of his bravery in battle, the French commander took Loyola and committed him to his surgeon. And then after he had treated him, sent him back to the castle of Loyola. Well, Loyola was a man of an iron will. He, as the leg was beginning to heal, he developed a limp. And he couldn't get his courtier's boot up over this big bump and bone on his leg.
Mm-hmm.
So what he did was, he had them break the leg again and reset it.
Jeez.
And still, it didn't heal properly. Then he put forth a rack to stretch his leg with no painkillers. And still, his leg was short forever. So he accepted the reality, but that story is so indicative of this man of a steel will who refuses to give up on anything. And this is typical of the Jesuit order. They never forget, in the words of Abraham Lincoln, they never forget nor forsake. And because it is a military order, they are under orders, and they have superiors as any army would, and they have absolute obedience. In fact, the SS was patterned after the Jesuit order, according to Hitler himself.
All right, let's talk a little bit about the oath that they take. What does it say?
It says that they will go, the important portion I have in my book is, I have actually six different sources for the oath. It's a couple pages long. But
how old are they?
They start back in 1845.
Okay.
And it says essentially that they will go into any country at the behest of the Pope to bring all these Protestant countries back to the fold of Rome, and that when they cannot openly kill a heretic, they will secretly use the poison cup, the steel of the poignard or the knife, the leaden bullet, and the strangulation cord. So they are the foremost assassins in carrying out their plans of subjugating the world to a Pope of their making.
Wow. All right, who leads them?
They are led by a man who is called the Jesuit Superior General. The Superior General of today is Peter Hans Kolbenbach. He's a Dutchman. He's about ready to step down. Next year they're going to have a convocation where they choose another general. But the Jesuit General is the leader. He has absolute power. And he has assistants underneath him. And those assistants govern a particular assistancy. Like the United States is one particular assistancy. They have 10 assistancies. And then under each assistant, they have a provincial. And so there are several provincials under each assistant.
So they they recognize no borders as we see them.
That's correct. That's correct. Because all the world is theirs in their eyes. And all the world is to subjugate. It's wealth, it's business, it's finances, it's doctrines, it's academia. All of it is for them to subjugate, to bring the nations in obedience, holy obedience, to the Pope of their making.
And so they break the world up into 10 assistancies.
10 assistancies.
And then those are broken down further.
Into provinces.
Mm-hmm.
And those provinces.
It's just the Roman Empire all over
that's
again.
That's correct. It's Roman government. And their purpose is to model all human governments after their government. So when we have the 14th Amendment in 1868, after the War of Annihilation against the white Protestant Southern people, they then subjugated all the states really to mere provinces of Washington. And Washington became incorporated in 1871. And so therefore the Vatican runs the United States through Washington. And all the governors are merely the lackeys of Washington. And most of them are high-level Freemasons, like our present governor in Pennsylvania, Ed Rendell. And Senator, U.S. Senator Arlen Specter, a 33rd degree Freemason, also involved in the Kennedy assassination. And Rick Santorum, who was the other senator who lost his seat in the last election, was a Knight of Malta. So the secret societies are in control of the higher-ups of every state government, and then they are subject to the Jesuits as they rule Washington from Georgetown University and as they rule New York from Fordham University.
So people that talk about cabals and secret societies and this sort of thing, there are lots of different ones. The Masons get a bad rap for sure. But there are lots of different ones. You mentioned the Knights of Malta. In other words, there are all kinds of secret societies, and I think that's pretty much people can agree upon that. I think for the most part, if they're paying attention and if they've done any bit of study, the question is how effective are they? In other words, Skull and Bones, everyone knows they exist, but you know the. People will poo-poo it and say, "Oh, well, it's just no big deal. You know, it's just a bunch of frat boys or whatever." But you're saying that regardless is that they all report to a higher order altogether anyway.
That's right. The Skull and Bones are subject to high-level Freemasonry, and also the Knights of Malta. Remember George Herbert Walker Bush
mm-hmm.
is a Knight of Malta, and William F. Buckley, who's Skull and Bones, is also a Knight of Malta. Skull and Bones is kind of the first junior secret society that they're brought into.
Junior secret society.
And then they bring them into the higher secrets when they can be trusted. People like J. Edgar Hoover. J. Edgar Hoover was a 33rd degree Freemason, and you know, his FBI was involved in the suppression of evidence in the Kennedy assassination, and his master, Lyndon Johnson, was a high-level Mason, and the Warren, Earl Warren, who was the one who supposedly authored the Warren Commission report, was a 33rd degree Freemason. He was a Grand Master of the State of California. He was the one who authored the horrible treatment of the American Japanese by sending them to Midwest concentration camps.
Hmm.
So, you know, we have these high-level Masonic secret societies, and I show in my book that the Jesuits authored their high rites, and they control at the very apex of power, all high-level Freemasonry, and that's all the other secret societies like the Mafia.
And the Jesuits actually wrote their rituals, you say?
That's correct. They wrote the first 25 degrees of the Scottish Rite in the College of Clermont in 1754.
Huh.
And then when they were protected by Frederick the Great, after they were suppressed by the Pope in 1773, they wrote the last eight rites with Frederick and created the Council of the 33rd Degree. And, of course, that was the beginning of May Day. And May Day is both a sacred date for the fascists and the communists.
Mm, yeah. The World Bank, the IMF, are they involved in this whole thing, too? They control these big financial institutions. You mentioned banking before.
Absolutely. I am advocacy outgrowth of the Federal Reserve Bank. It's their world bank to manage the nations, manage the credit of the nations, so that they will be obedient. And the purpose is for the Jesuits of submitting that nation to the government of the Pope. If you will not submit to the Pope, then you will not get this credit from the IMF.
All right, so that worked out through the United States Federal Reserve Bank, though.
The Federal Reserve Bank is the forerunner of the IMF.
Okay.
The Federal Reserve is controlled by the Jesuits. I have, in my book, I show that there were several Jesuits on the Federal Reserve Board. And it's through the Federal Reserve Bank, this exclusive power to create credit.
Right, which is not an institution of the United States federal government.
That's correct. Lewis versus United States says that the Federal Reserve Bank is a private bank.
That's right, private.
And it has never been audited. It has never filed a tax return. It is exempt.
How about those apples, people? Say that again, just for fun.
The Federal Reserve Bank has never been audited. Its books have never been opened to the GAO, and therefore its privilege in creating credit is absolutely private, and nobody really knows what they're doing.
That's right, and it's a private institution, people.
Just like the IRS.
It has shareholders.
That's right.
It doesn't, and it ain't us.
That's right. High shareholders, the most important ones, are J.P. Morgan Chase. And J.P. Morgan Chase is run by the Knights of Malta. They use their high-level Masonic Jews also, who are also knights, like Henry Kissinger. But
yeah,
J.P. Morgan Chase.
He's a real lovely one. Yeah.
But J.P. Morgan Chase has a telex directly to the Vatican from its New York office.
Is that right?
That's right.
Okay, now the Vatican, I mean, and there's been plenty in the news over the last 15, 20 years about Vatican banking business, and they've been exposed to some scandal, and it's been mitigated, as it always is. But at any rate, maybe you could talk a little bit about the Vatican and banking in general. I mean, the fact that they control so much capital, and should be an indicator of something, at least.
Sure. This goes back to Roman government that the Jesuits have mastered. Every nation has a center city that controls its politics and its banking. Some nations are two cities, like Washington and New York here. In Russia, it's Moscow and St. Petersburg. These banking institutions are the central bank that was called for by Karl Marx. Now, the doctrine of communism, which central bank and heavy progressive income tax are two of those planks, communism was perfected by the Jesuits on their reductions in South America from about 1607 to 1759, 1760.
And just a brutal period there.
Very brutal.
I mean brutal. This was the rubber, quote-unquote, the rubber boom.
Right.
Hardly a boom for the people that lived there, but...
Right. And there were 57 reductions. And a reduction is a commune, a kibbutz. And these reductions were governed in this manner, each according to his ability, and to each according to his need. And anything beyond that, the Jesuits took and used their fleet of black ships and put them into international commerce and trade, made billions, and then would take all this money and ignite their wars of annihilation against historic Protestant nations and against Roman Catholic nations that refused to submit to the Jesuit order. So their control of commerce back then was very important, and so much control that they had that ultimately led to their suppression by the Pope in 1773 with a papal bull, Dominic Acqua Redemptor Noster, where he suppressed them and extinguished them forever. Well, that poor Pope was poisoned, and Pope Clement XIV. And then the Jesuits waged their French Revolution, controlling Napoleon Bonaparte, to punish all the Catholic monarchs of Europe who had kicked them out of their countries, France, Portugal, Spain, Malta, Austria. And then after the Napoleonic Wars, they reinstituted their tyranny with the Holy Alliance, which to today we would call the United Nations. So the Jesuits are the greatest thinkers, the epitome of accomplished knowledge, having brought in the science of every art into their orb, and control of the masters of all the sciences so they can speak with them with regard to what they think ought to be done. That's why they control 28 universities, not to mention the great influence in Harvard and University of Chicago and others.
All right, look, Eric, we're at the bottom of the hour. Let's take a break, okay?
Okay.
Amazing stuff, everybody. It's Eric John Phelps. You can find information about Mr. Phelps on the web at www.vaticanassassins.org. He has a book of the same name, which you can certainly get from the website there. How's the book's been out for how many years now, Eric?
The first edition has been out since 2001, but it's no longer available, and I just released my third edition.
And how's it been received now that it's been out there for 6-7 years almost?
Well, I get very little debate.
I mean, you're still breathing, though. I have a question. Somebody said before the show, ask Eric how he's still breathing.
That's true. I was poisoned a couple of years ago, and I lost 20 pounds. And,
my God. Well,
they regard it as a virtuous thing to kill their enemies. So, but I just trust the Lord, and the Lord takes care of me and protects me. And as long as I'm not reckless and getting off in some sort of sinful lifestyle, I will be protected.
All right. Well, we'll come back in just a minute, okay?
Okay.
All right, everybody. It's Eric John Phelps on the web one more time, vaticanassassins.org. And it's Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. Check it out on the web, Mike Hagan, HAGAN.com. You can listen live at KOPN.org. And lots of stuff going on at KOPN all the time. In the meantime, this is Mankind Liberation Front. You can check them out at their own website, mankindliberationfront.com. This one's called Jackie's Joining the Navy. It's Mike. I'll be back in just a minute.
Jackie's joining the Navy. Everyone thinks she's crazy. Everyone thinks she's crazy. But I've seen her with a machete and pinning down all the ladies. I don't think she's crazy.
All right, that's Mankind Liberation Front one more time on KOPN Radio Orbit. It's Mike. Check this out, okay? I got to take care of a piece of business here. KOPN's Women's Issues, Women's Voices, with the financial assistance of the City of Columbia Department of Cultural Affairs, is proud to air Maya Angelou's 1983 presentation at Westminster College. The performance includes poems by Black American poets. She focuses on love, tells stories about her life, and performs several of her own poems. Tune in on April 26th at 7 p.m. to Women's Issues, Women's Voices, only on your community radio station, 89.5 FM, KOPN Columbia. All right, streaming on the web always now at kopn.org. Okay, it's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit. It is KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. We've got about 12:37 in the AM now on the 27th of March. Happy spring to you all. We've got Eric John Phelps with us live from his place in Pennsylvania. And late in the night, early in the morning, thank you, Eric, for staying up with us tonight.
A pleasure to be with you.
And, well, let's get on with it here. You mentioned before the break there, Eric, and let me mention the website real fast, www.vaticanassassins.org. And you can link there from my site from here on out, okay? We'll have the archive up in the next 24 hours or so. All right, Eric, you mentioned the fact that I'm interested in astronomy, right? And I learned long ago that the Jesuits have a tremendous amount of influence and control over the astronomical world, including many of the telescopes that that gather data. Could you talk about that at all?
Well, Kepler's uncle was a Jesuit.
Johannes Kepler?
Yes.
Hmm.
And the Jesuits managed to steal all the work of Tycho Brahe.
Mm.
And because they sought to bring the world into the belief of heliocentricity. And according to the Bible, we have geocentricity. We don't have heliocentricity.
Mm.
And so they keep us believing these false astronomy doctrines in addition to other things. So they penetrate all the sciences and then they alter them so that we can't know truly how they work. For example, electromagnetism with Clerk Maxwell. Clerk Maxwell was a white Anglo-Saxon Presbyterian Calvinist who's considered to be the father of electricity and magnetism. He wrote his treatise back in the 1800s. And this became the foundation of magnetism and electricity that we know today, and really the foundation for anti-gravity. So the Jesuits have created a monopoly with their technology and not allowing us to have electromagnetic motors, and they keep us addicted to their fossil fuels when we have the technology to completely eliminate that, because they want a huge war in the Middle East. And to do that, they have to keep everybody's attention on the oil from the Middle East.
Well, that sure seems apparent.
Yeah.
There's certainly, for whatever reason, a tremendous reluctancy to leave the internal combustion engine behind, and I don't know why. I mean, you know, as you mentioned, the physics and the mathematics and the engineering for probably many different kinds of these devices has been around for 100 years. I mentioned Wilhelm Reich earlier. You know, we know of Tesla's work. There's so much now that people know about, but it just has yet to be, reach critical mass. So, what do you make of that whole business? In other words, the fact that we're learning so much about this stuff now, does that can't play well into these people's plans? The idea that we're learning so much about our own past that we didn't know before.
I'm convinced that they don't like it, but because of their ability to direct
and manipulate events, etc.
Yes. Then the discovery of these things doesn't arrive at their proper conclusion, like manufacturing and getting it out there. For example, there's a Japanese man who invented a device that you just attach to your car, and you run it on water, you run it on hydrogen.
Mm-hmm.
And the Japanese Yakuza came to him and told him, you will give us that device, and you will never put it out again.
And what's Yakuza's a mafioso there?
Yes, the Yakuza is the Japanese mafia. And remembering that the Jesuits control all the mafia families.
Even the Japanese, the Chinese, etc.
Oh, yes. Oh, sure. They World War II reduced Japan to a Jesuit colony controlled by Washington.
Hmm.
So that means they also controlled the secret society.
Interesting. What about China?
Same thing.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Well, China, remember, Jesuits brought Mao Zedong to power, but they created an illusion when in 1949 Mao Zedong expelled the Jesuit order, so the Jesuits could have their hue and cry against communism, you know. But the fact is that Mao Zedong was a good friend of Wild Bill Donovan. Wild Bill Donovan was the head of the USS. Donovan arranged the murder of John Birch by Mao Zedong, and he also arranged the murder of General Patton. So the intelligence agencies control the governments, and they also control the mafias of the various different countries, because they're going to have a complete and total monopoly on all prostitution, drug running, what have you.
Let's talk about that. Mm-hmm. Prostitution, drug running. Let's talk about children, too.
Okay.
You know, that's been in the news, and it's something that should be of concern to everybody. As much as you'd like to, I know it gets a little bit touchy, but talk about drugs, sex, slavery, children, whatever you want, because I think it's real important.
Right. The Jesuits, in the control of the Sicilian mafia, control the whole pornographic sex slave industry. And we have to remember that there's 5 processing plants for heroin on the island of Sicily alone. So the Jesuits control all the sex pornography on the web. They control the organized prostitution in the major cities through the mafia. And, of course, the police are paid off. And then they also control the pedophile rings, as spoken of by my friend and former New York police detective Jim Rothstein.
Mm.
And that connection between the pedophile ring and Cardinal Spellman.
Yeah, you know, I've interviewed John DeCamp. I don't know if you know who John DeCamp is. You probably do. And that whole business at Boys Town in Omaha, obviously, is, I mean, you can't argue the connection, obviously. I mean, this is a Catholic-run institution. And, I mean, it's only one example of many.
And and Rothstein said that there's not one of these cases that cannot be solved. But you get to a certain point, and they will not let you solve them. Not let you investigate or bring anybody to justice. And this opens up another subject where I'm advocating secession.
Hmm.
I advocate that each state begin to secede and restore its own sovereign power to itself, that our police agencies can punish this crime, because obviously Washington's not going to do it.
I'm all for it. Drug running.
Mm-hmm.
Same business. There's obviously a lot of money in drugs. They're going to be in it.
Absolutely. The Jesuits control the whole cocaine cartel out of Colombia through the mafia.
And again, this is basically people have to recognize the history of what happened in South and Central America during the years that you talked about. In other words, the fact that it was colonized, essentially, and it was an imperial colonization by, essentially, the Vatican.
That's right. The Vatican controlled Spain and Portugal.
Mm-hmm.
And so in controlling those kings, the priests had absolute sway there until the Jesuits were suppressed. But, yes, South America, all that was produced there was put into their international commerce and trade. And South America, because it is historically Catholic, has always been disgraced with military dictators.
Oh, man.
And it's been, the middle class has not been allowed to arise there. And so they keep the people down so that they can never have any say with their government.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, for people out there who are listening to this, and, you know, I don't know much about the history of the Jesuit order and stuff. And I know as much as I've learned from Eric's books and things like that. But I know this much. I know that if you learn about the history of the brutal work that was done in South and Central America, you know, before Guernica, before Auschwitz, before all this stuff, it was all done on the rehearsal stage in South and Central America during the rubber boom, the Putumayo rubber boom, where you know, populations of indigenous people were literally wiped out.
That's right, 100 million of them, 100 million. The other thing is that they control the entire emerald industry out of Colombia. All those people that they're like ants digging out the rocks and so on for the emerald industry there, the Jesuits control it all. And of course, Colombia has a concordat with the Pope, which is a treaty placing the papacy above the laws of the country, and that the country will enforce canon law. So South America has been reduced to penury and poverty through the power of the priests, and especially the Jesuit order.
And what's happening in Africa?
Africa, the same thing. Remember, the Jesuits were out to destroy historically white Anglo-Saxon Protestant nations. So they had their student, Bill Clinton, embargo South Africa. And now it's been given over to the blacks. They are cutting down every tree in Johannesburg and essentially destroying the country. Same way with Zimbabwe. In fact, Robert Mugabe is Jesuit trained. And of course, he hates white people. He's called for their murder and death. And that ends the white farmers, and then the people starve. So he's essentially killing his own people by killing the historic white Protestant farmers.
Yeah, Mugabe's nuts. I mean, I mean, he's absolutely a lunatic.
Yeah, and he's Jesuit trained and went to the Pope's funeral. So that's what they've done in Africa. And in Africa, they're also, well, it goes back to the early 1900s when King Leopold II.
You know, I have to tell you something personal, too, just so you know. And I've mentioned this on the air briefly before, but, you know, I grew up, my family's Catholic, my mother and father to this day, right? And I was brought up in the Catholic Church. I went to Catholic schools through high school. I was altar boy, the whole business, lit the candles and everything, right? Mm-hmm. And poured the wine and shook the little bell. And I was fully indoctrinated into the whole business, right? Mm-hmm. And I went to Rome. I was fortunate enough to have a friend who was in Vienna for an exchange program, and I went over there to visit with him, and we traveled throughout Europe for a while. And you know, I was 19 years old, and I was fully Catholic, and I wanted to go to Rome, you know,
mm-hmm.
And so we did, and we went there, and I wanted to see the cathedral and St. Peter's Square and the whole business. Maybe if we were lucky, get an audience with the Pope, which was Pope John Paul II. You know, this was probably 1984. And anyway, I was just fully engaged and just enraptured by the whole thing. I thought it was so neat. And then I tried to get into the library. I asked if I could get into the, you know, what I would have to do to get into the Vatican Library. And I wanted to see not only the books, but I was interested in the artwork, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, I was not allowed in.
Right.
And it, really, that was it for me, to be honest. That was it. And I went, after that, I tried to figure out, well, why is it okay for, you know, I mean, if I can't see it, and I'm a good Catholic boy, you know what I mean, did all the right stuff, well, who can see it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I realized that it was this whole hierarchical business, and it was all about secrecy and control and stuff, but I looked at it far enough where I decided I didn't want to be a part of it anymore, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But I never really pushed any further than that until, of course, obviously, I was interested in things of this nature, I guess, because I came across you and your book. But at any rate, it's amazing how powerful the whole thing is.
I always distinguish between the Roman Catholic people and the Roman hierarchy, or the papacy.
Yeah, because there's good people there.
That's,
you know?
Right. I was raised around Catholics. My first girlfriends were Catholics. And they have no concept of the temporal power and the history of the Jesuits, you know. So the people do not know the doctrines of the Jesuit order and the Vatican, and so therefore in many ways cannot be blamed for what the hierarchy does, but they should be informed of it. Otherwise they will be used to carry out mass murders like the Jesuits used the Croats,
mm-hmm.
in World War II with the Croatian Ustashi killing 700,000 Serbs and Jews.
But Eric, don't you also think, though, that people have a responsibility? I mean, if they're going to buy into an ideology, that they owe it to themselves and certainly anyone that they pass the ideology on to actually know something about the history of that ideology?
Oh, sure, sure. But I make this point so that when people say, why, you're a bigot, you hate Roman Catholics.
Mm.
No, that's not the point. And right. If I did hate Roman Catholics, I would have never defended John F. Kennedy and Cardinal Spellman, who murdered him.
Hmm. Okay, I tell you what, we've got about 3 or 4 minutes before we take a break here. Let's talk about Lincoln a little bit, and then we'll do that before the top of the hour, and then at the top of the hour we'll come back and we'll start to talk about John Kennedy and some of the events and the historical situations that affected us in the 20th century and what's happening now. Okay. So a little bit maybe about Lincoln and how that tied in. You mentioned it earlier in the program.
Okay, Lincoln was not going to centralize power in Washington after the war. He wanted the states to come into the Union on the same footing that they had left, and Seward wanted the same thing. Well, the whole purpose for the war was to centralize power in Washington, in addition to destroying the Protestant states of Virginia, North and South Carolina, and Georgia. So, because he did not want to do this, then Bernard F. Wiggett, who was the most powerful Jesuit in Washington, I have a picture of him in my book, managed and oversaw the conspiracy for the assassination of Lincoln in the persons of John Surratt and his personal friend John Wilkes Booth. And all this information is available in a couple of books, 50 Years in the Church of Rome by Father Chiniqui, Charles Chiniqui, and then The Suppressed Truth About the Assassination of Abraham Lincoln by Burke McCarty, published in 1924. And then General Harris's work, because he was on the military tribunal and tried the conspirators. So it's absolutely set in stone that the Jesuits killed Lincoln, but they got away with it because nobody teaches about it. Shows what they did, exactly like the Kennedy assassination.
I have a question that just popped up on the web, and we were just talking about Africa. Mm-hmm. And in large print, somebody writes, Africa is so screwed up by design.
That's right. Remember, the Jesuits, through the World Health Organization, have caused this epidemic of AIDS in Africa. And so where they can't kill the black Africans in open war, like Rwanda, and the present one that's going on now in Darfur, they use the vaccinations, which they have forced on the black Africans. So that's right. They keep Africa down, and their whole desire is to make it Muslim, like Idi Amin and others. And Islam is the sword of the church. It's controlled by the Vatican, and they do the killing of the heretics and the liberals that the Jesuits want eliminated.
So Islam is under the umbrella as well?
That's correct, through high-level Freemasonry. And they've been under Jesuit control no later, in about 1750, with the creation of the Wahhabis. And, of course, they gave Saudi Arabia to the Wahhabis in 1932, and I call that the Jesuits' general oil bonanza.
All right. Hang in there, Eric. We'll come back, all right?
Okay.
All right, everybody, listen up. Eric John Phelps, author of Vatican Assassins, he's with us. We've got him for another hour. It is closing in on 1 o'clock now on the 27th of March, 2007. It's Mike Hagen. You're listening to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. We're also listening to the music tonight of a band called the Mankind Liberation Front. It's good stuff. We'll play another song from them in just a second here. Let me see if I have any business that I need to take care of. I got an extra minute. So, Earth Day volunteers. Let's mention that again. Earth Day is coming up, middle of April. If you want to help out, call down here at the station, 874-1139. We'd love to have your assistance. Okay, we're going to have a big presence this year, and there's going to be a lot going on. It's going to be a fun time. So come on down, help us out for Earth Day, 573-874-1139. There's a whole Maya Angelou business going on in April where she was interviewed, and the girls that do this program called Women's Issues, Women's Vote, Women's Issues, Women's Voices, is presenting a whole bunch of really cool stuff with Maya Angelou in April as well. So tune into all that stuff, okay? All right, it's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia. We've got Eric John Phelps. We'll be back with him in just a few minutes. In the meantime, Mankind Liberation Front on the web at the website of the same name, and this song is called Safe from the Sun. Mankind Liberation Front. Good stuff there. Safe from the Sun. And it's Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. 1 a.m. straight up on the 27th of March, 2007. Can you believe it? Spring is here. Summer soon. We have Eric John Phelps with us from his place in Pennsylvania. And it's 2 o'clock in the morning there, and we appreciate him staying up with us. And hello again, Eric. Hi.
A pleasure to be with you.
Hey, listen, before we went to the break, we were talking about so much, but this idea, you know, the whole problem with Islam right now is such a main part of the world stage. the fact that Islam might be controlled by the Vatican is going to just be an astounding fact to some people. You have to expand on it a little bit.
Sure. I've paralleled the likeness between Roman Catholicism and Islam, and they are striking. For example, Islam has its jihads. Rome has its crusades. Islam calls for the conversion of the infidel with the sword. Roman Catholicism calls for the conversion of the heretic with the sword. Both religions venerate Mary. And in the past, I showed that Islam over the last 100 years has always worked with Jesuit fascism. For example, the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem spent 4 years in Berlin with Adolf Hitler.
What? The Grand what?
Grand Mufti.
And who? And that's an Islamic position?
That's an Islamic position. That's like the Archbishop
okay.
of the Catholic Church. So the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem, he went to Berlin and for 4 years helped recruit Muslims in Yugoslavia to fight with Himmler's SS. They were called the Cutthroats, the Henshar. And their purpose was to murder the Orthodox Serbs, because Islam has always hated Orthodoxy. Another example of this is the Spanish Civil War from 1936 to 1939. Franco was aided by 40,000 Arab Muslim troopers in the subjugation of his own Spanish people, who had kicked out the Jesuits and who wanted some sort of liberty in Spain. Franco said, "I'm prepared to shoot every Spaniard to restore the Pope's power." So he was aided by the Muslims. In fact, they met at the Canary Islands, and from there, they invaded Spain.
Amazing.
And then we have Islam, high-level Islam, working in conjunction with George Bush through the leader of Saudi Arabia, and also Osama bin Laden, because the Bushes and the bin Ladens were business partners in Kalahari for 25 years.
Yeah, that's no news anymore. I mean, again, if you're paying attention, you know that this is the truth of the matter.
So it's very important that we realize that fascism, which is the Jesuits' favorite form of government, is aided and abetted by Islam.
What about, and this is going to sound silly, but the Shriners? I always look at their hat, and they have like this, they have the same symbol on these funny little caps that they wear. These guys drive around the streets here on these little bitty cars during parades and stuff.
Right.
But anyway, the hat is like an Islamic hat.
That's right. It's a fez. And so they all wear fezes.
What's the business with that?
Well, they, in Shriner Freemasonry, they swear allegiance to Allah. And you can read that in Jim Shaw's book, The Deadly Deception. Who was a high-level 33rd degree Freemason, and then he came to know the Lord, and he wrote his book, and he was ultimately killed. But he shows you that every Shriner gives his allegiance to Allah. So that includes J. Edgar Hoover.
Remarkable. All right. Before we go to the Kennedy thing, one more thing that I think needs to be asked. What's going on at the heart of the whole thing? In other words, this is supposed to be a Christian business with, you know, love thy neighbor and you know, ideals that are not about murder and deception and all this other stuff. I mean, if this is being... Well, I mean, who does Kolvenbach report to, first of all? That's a question that needs to be answered. Does Hans Kolvenbach report to the Pope?
In canon law, yes.
In canon law.
Why
did you qualify that like that?
Because in actuality, he is sovereign over the Pope.
How is that so?
Well, the Pope will do his bidding. And if he doesn't do his bidding, he will end up like John Paul I. So the Black Pope is the absolute power over the Vatican, and the popes are merely his creations and do what they're told.
Hey, you know, again, this the title, the Black Pope, I didn't realize that that's actually a term that they use in their own writings and stuff. In other words, I found an article actually today when I was snooping around a little bit about Kolvenbach supposedly retiring in 2008, and the Jesuits were going to elect a new black pope, but this was in the Catholic News, and they actually used the words black pope. Mm-hmm. Anyway,
the Italians are the ones who coined the phrase.
Well, that was remarkable to me that they actually use it in their own language.
Sure, because the Jesuit general can usually be seen in a black Cossack,
and
whereas the white pope is usually dressed in white.
Uh-huh. Well, let's talk a little bit more about his ability to dominate the papacy. For have there been more than one assassinations of popes? In other words, you're implying that John Paul I was assassinated?
Oh yes.
Have there been other precedents?
Oh yes.
Talk about them, and do we have proof of them?
Sure. We have the proof that the Jesuits assassinated Pope Clement XIV for suppressing them and extinguishing them forever in 1773. I have a host of sources for that in my book. And then, in fact, Corminan, who is a Roman Catholic historian, comes right out and says the Jesuits killed him. And then Pope John Paul I, the works of Avro Manhattan, Murder in the Vatican, and then David Yalop's In God's Name make it absolutely clear that he was murdered. And in fact, Pope John Paul I was going to relieve Jesuit General Pedro Arrupi of his command. Well, there's no pope that has that power. He thought he was pope, just like Kennedy thought he was president.
Okay, so onward then. A big part of your research involves John F. Kennedy. Mm-hmm. So it's taken us an hour to get there, but let's talk now about John Kennedy and what was significant about his assassination, about his presidency. How were the Jesuits involved, and what is, and I guess, well, we'll just leave it at that for now, but further in the program we'll have to talk about what it means today, because there are events obviously that are still unfolding.
Sure.
All right, so talk about Kennedy.
Okay. John F. Kennedy's father was one of the most powerful knights of Malta in the country, Joe Kennedy
in Chicago.
In New York.
Or New York.
Boston.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Duh. Okay.
And Joe Kennedy was one of the three Irish Roman Catholic short sellers in 1929 who caused the Great Depression. And in 1929, that's the same year that the Pope's temporal power was restored by Benito Mussolini, because it had been suppressed since 1870 to 1929, and the money that was given to the Vatican by the Italian people when they were raped for $100 million approximately, then the Vatican took that $100 million really in gold and purchased all of the major corporations on Wall Street. So Wall Street is completely run by the Knights of Malta. Joe Kennedy also helped to put FDR in office. Of course, FDR was the great socialist, the great 33rd degree Freemason. He was behind the Pearl Harbor attack with Emperor Hirohito. Both of them were Masons, and so they could create this issue to justify a war in the Pacific, because the Japanese people had expelled the Jesuits from Japan for over 250 years, and now it was payback time for them.
Hmm.
Joseph Kennedy, being involved in getting his son into office, did not know that John would not uphold the temporal power of the Pope. And when he spoke to a ministerial meeting in Houston, 1960, before the election, he so told all those Protestants and Baptists that no Pope, no religious institution, will tell me, the President, what to do. So what he did was, he openly repudiated the temporal power of the Pope. And that's when they began to set his assassination in motion, in the 60s, 1960. So John F. Kennedy was killed. He was shot five times, twice in the back, twice in the head, and once in the throat. And his execution was public and gruesome to show the high leaders of the world that if we can kill an American president at 12:30 in the afternoon, we can kill you, and we can get away with it, because nobody went to trial. And this includes Lee Iacocca, who still lives, Cartha DeLoach, that night of Malta, Lee Iacocca, that night of Malta, William F. Buckley, that night of Malta. All these guys were involved in the murder of JFK, and yet none of them has been indicted because the Jesuits control the Justice Department. So that is, in a nutshell, why they killed Kennedy. And as a result of this, really threw the country into sort of a psychosis. It's never really recovered from. And we've lost our trust in government to do what we want them to do. And as things continually get worse, that loss of trust is justified, but it really was solidified by the Jesuit assassination of Kennedy. In fact, Jesuit John Lafarge was Spellman's right-hand man. And they had a wonderful time in the assassination of Kennedy. So,
who's Spellman?
Spellman? Spellman was the Archbishop of New York City, Francis Cardinal Spellman. In fact, not far from me at the Jesuit novitiate, or former Jesuit novitiate in Wernersville here, Cardinal Spellman had a room that he would visit the Jesuits in, called Room Number 3. So Spellman was controlled by the Jesuits of Fordham. The New York Cathedral is called the political powerhouse, even to this day, where nothing happens in New York City without the blessing or permission from the Archbishop of New York.
Who's that now? Egan?
Egan.
Patrick Egan?
Yeah, Egan is the dictator of the United States. He is the prince of the church that rules this country in full control of all the intelligence agencies, the CIA, the FBI, the IRS. All these alphabet agencies are ultimately controlled by him in his huge inquisitional gathering of information on the American people. And it was Egan, whose Knight of Malta, George J. Tenet, controlling national security.
Former CIA director.
Former CIA director, trained by Jesuits, School of Foreign Service in Georgetown. He oversaw the bringing down of the World Trade Center, because he was one of the few holdovers from the Clinton administration, and they had planned this since the Clinton administration.
All right, before we go there, I want to talk more about Kennedy. Okay. Let's talk about where it happened and when it happened. Is it significant that it happened in Dealey Plaza?
In Dealey Plaza, yes. That was kind of like a 33rd degree Masonic crossfire. There's one author that's written something on that, and I think it's very significant. But there was crossfires from, of course, the grassy knoll. They didn't shoot anything from the grassy knoll. That was a distraction. You have smoking gunpowder there, and we've had smokeless gunpowder since the turn of the century in 1900. So it was a distraction. You have them shooting from the Daltex building and from the Texas School Book Depository as a triangular crossfire. But the real killers were the driver, William Greer, who turned around, shot him in the face, shot him in the temple. Then the shooter from the storm sewer, which apparently was Johnny Roselli, involved in the St. Valentine's Day massacre years ago. And then the other shooter was George Hickey, who stood up in the rear follow-up limousine and shot Kennedy twice in the back with the low-velocity rounds of his M16.
How do we know that?
I documented all in my book. Kennedy was shot 5 times. I showed the 2 pictures of the holes in his back. I show that he had to have been shot twice in the head. And I show, of course, the throat wound. And because of this, we have our inspector, the 33rd degree Freemason, Masonic Jew, who is Spelly's Jew, and concocted the single bullet theory, and expects us to believe it.
How much of this was captured on film that we haven't seen? Do you have any idea?
Probably a lot of it. Apparently there's an individual that's coming out with a film that he's kept suppressed for all these years, because he knew that if he brought it out, he'd either be killed or they would destroy the film. But I have a shot. It was taken by Mary Muchmore. She turned her picture over to UPI, and when she got her picture back from UPI, they had etched out a parallel portion of the picture so that you could not see the driver. the entire edition of the picture, so I have it in my book so people can see that. And then the other one, I show how the shooter from the storm sewer stood up in the storm sewer and shot Kennedy on the side of the head, and that was the round that sent Skull and Bone and hit Officer Hargis. And they found that .45 slug in the grass, and I have a picture of an FBI agent picking it up in the grass. He puts it in his pocket, and that's the last you ever see of it. And then, of course, William Greer, who did the was the real fatal shot when he shot Kennedy with an exploding round from the front and blew out the back of his head, and it landed on the street, and a portion of the skull was discovered, and it was called the Harper fragment. And so it's pretty well easy to prove that he was shot twice in the head from where the fragments went to, and then once in the throat, of course, the first shot, and then twice in the back because there's two bullet holes in the back.
By three different assassins.
That's correct.
Remarkable. All right, and again, what was Kennedy doing that was... I understand that he... Is that all that he did, was just up front deny the authority of the Pope?
The temporal power.
The temporal power. In other words, the Pope is considered, in this frame of mind, to be essentially God on earth.
That's correct.
And whatever he says goes, regardless.
That's correct.
Doesn't matter what he says.
That's right.
We've talked about I'm sorry to cut him, but I keep thinking about things. But the Japanese come back to mind. Pearl Harbor, the atomic bombs. This is, again, a Jesuit piece of work?
That's correct. There were no bombs dropped from the B-29s on Hiroshima and Nagasaki.
What do you mean?
Well, what was dropped was magnesium flash bombs that were the one over Hiroshima was... had a uranium slug in it, so that uranium would come down and make it look like it was an atomic airburst. And the bomb over Nagasaki had a plutonium slug in it to make it look like it was a plutonium airburst. But what really happened was the Jesuits had already perfected these atomic blasts by no later than 1943. And so they were assembling these pieces of equipment on the ground with the aid and comfort of the Japanese military high command. And when the bomb was detonated, there's a B-29. Oh, we also have to remember that there was no Allied bombing of Hiroshima. And Hiroshima had 90,000 Japanese troops. So why wouldn't you bomb Hiroshima? Because the triggers in these devices are very sensitive. Bombs would throw them off, and then these devices would not detonate. So they did not bomb Nagasaki, and they did not bomb Hiroshima. But they firebombed the rest of Japan. When the detonation took place at Hiroshima, Pedro Arupi wasn't far away, about 4 miles away. And when he went to the center of the city and viewed it, there were five Jesuits that emerged from ground zero and attributed the miracle of surviving this to the Virgin Mary. When what they had done was they learned how to shield it, and they were underneath this device so that it would go out and up, but not down.
But it wasn't a nuclear device?
It was an atomic device, yes.
Oh, yeah.
But the bombs that were dropped were not atomic.
All right, so the devices were on the ground.
That's correct. And so that's why I say that there is no such thing as airborne nuclear war.
That's interesting because that's very interesting you bring that up, Eric, because there's a guy whose name is Bruce Cathy. I don't know if you know.
Right. I quote Bruce in my book.
Okay, all right.
Harmonic 33.
Yeah, very, very interesting. All right. So, the idea that nuclear weapons are sort of, they're much more dependent on time and spatial parameters.
Correct.
It's a geometric device, in other words.
Correct.
Yeah.
Because we understand geocentricity,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That the sun revolves around the earth, and it revolves around the earth in a corkscrew manner, up and down. That's where you get your seasons. That these devices can only detonate when the sun's in a right harmonic relationship to them. So they have perfected their windows of detonation with all their atomic testing of the past. So they have their devices set here in the U.S., and when they want to detonate one, it has to be at the right time of the season, probably anywhere from July to the 1st of October. And then when they detonate them, then they can blame them on the Muslims, because Iran is supposed to get nuclear weapons within 6 months.
Which is total cockamamie, or whatever.
Right? That's right. So because they have, we have to be told that they have nuclear weapons so that they can detonate these devices in key places in the country, these surgical devices, so that the Muslims can be blamed. And then when the Muslims are blamed, then they can call for total war against the Muslim peoples.
So that's what you think is in store, is that there's going to be a nuclear event in this country?
That's correct.
Or more than one?
Several of them. The CIA has said since 2002 that they anticipate this. Of course, remember, the CIA is run by the Vatican through the Knights of Malta.
And NSA and the OS, NRO and everybody.
All of them.
So basically everyone. And Cheney and Rummy and all the gang and Condi and everyone's just essentially just doing what they're told.
That's right. They're all members of the Council on Foreign Relations. The Archbishop of New York controls the CFR.
And that's Egan again.
Egan, that's right. So, yes, I believe that's what they're going to do. And, of course, we see these movies like Jericho and other things, and so I have no doubt that they're going to do this. There'll be surgical detonations so as not to overthrow the commerce of the country, because they have to have commerce to conduct this crusade. And I believe that one of the purposes of this crusade, two of the purposes, is to destroy Mecca and Medina, of which the bin Laden family will participate in, and the rebuilding of the ancient city of Babylon. Because the scriptures say that Babylon has to be destroyed a certain way by fire, and the old Babylon was never destroyed that way. So they're going to rebuild it. In fact, they're talking about a new caliphate to be centered in Babylon right now. So they have a and that's when they're going to move the financial capital of the West to the Mideast, Babylon, Dubai, and other places, because that will be the commercial center of the earth.
And Iraq.
That's why the Iraq war is not going to end, no matter who is elected.
That's pretty clear now. I mean, obviously, the big, fancy elections of November that were supposed to be so profound and bring all this change, they've done nothing. So.
Nothing. And all of the candidates, Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton,
right.
They're all CFR-controlled. So it doesn't matter who's president, they're going to do what they're told. And if they don't, they'll get Kennedy'd. So this war has to continue. Newt Gingrich says this war will continue. He's a member of the CFR. He's an apostate Baptist, a member of the CFR. And he said this war will run between 30 and 50 years. So it looks like we have another 30 years war on our hands. And they're going to break us financially, as well as kill millions of our American sons and daughters on a two-front war that we cannot win.
Well, that's a nice thought.
Yeah. So that's why I advocate secession. I advocate the secession of Pennsylvania. We have enough in the state to have our own nation. If Haiti can be its own nation, if Cyprus can be its own nation, why can't Pennsylvania be its own nation? In the same way with Arkansas, where you are, Arkansas, Missouri.
Yeah, and I mean, it's perfectly within the charter of the way these places were actually designed to be able to do this.
Of course. And this federal government has given you every reason to call for secession. They've stole your gold. They've stole your silver. They've given you worthless fiat money. They have interest that reduces your buying power. They've erected British free trade with NAFTA and GATT, destroying all of our domestic manufacturers. They're letting in all these alien invading Roman Catholic Mexicans and Latinos whose first allegiance is the Roman hierarchy. And so they're destroying our country, destroying our historic culture. And with that, it's part of the creation of this North American Union, which is nothing but high treason. So the Vatican is completely behind this, and that's why I say that the best thing to do is have the governor and House assembled secede. And I tell you, if your state would do that, I would be the first one to move to it.
Is there a secessionist movement in Vermont going on?
Apparently, but I
mean, I wonder if it's the real deal or if it's just another... I mean, you never know how some of this stuff is masked. A lot
right.
of these times,
that's correct.
You know,
that's correct. The Jesuits have their open policies, and then they have their secret but true policies. You always have to look: is this the open but false policy, or is this the secret but true policy? For example, they always had a hue and cry against the Cold War, godless Jew communism, the Cold War, when in fact the Jesuits ran all the communist nations. They ran Soviet Russia.
Through,
they ran communist China.
Maybe a little bit of detail on that. In other words, how do we know that the Jesuit order was running these countries?
Yep.
Through obviously through Lenin, Marx, what?
Yes, and to the British secret intelligence, for example.
So MI6, MI5, that's all Jesuit. Of course, all
of course.
Right.
For sure. I have all the Magnificent Five there in my book, and I show their collusion and working
Mossad?
With the KGB.
Mossad?
Of course. Oh, yeah. Mossad was created by the CIA. So the Mossad eliminates any true patriots of Israel wanting to have their own sovereign nation and keeps them all down, subject to the papacy.
Rabin.
Rabin murdered for that reason. He wasn't going to go along with it.
Man.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was an unbelievable thing when Yitzhak Rabin was murdered.
Yeah. And my friend Barry Chamish has documented that real well, and
mm-hmm.
he agrees that it was the Vatican who did it. And then Shimon Peres was trained by Jesuits in Poland. So the Vatican controls all the intelligence. In my book, I call it the International Intelligence Community of the Black Pope. Then he also controls the international banking community. He controls the international Islamic Masonic terrorist network. And through the control of all those things, then he controls all the alphabet agencies in the U.S., especially the IRS, the largest administrative bureau in the world. And your social security number is a direct result of the Vatican's legislation back in the 1930s with FDR's New Deal. So that's how they've tagged us and labeled us.
Yeah, I remember when I was a kid, my social security card, it actually had something printed on it. It said, not to be used for identification purposes. It actually said that on it.
Yeah.
And it doesn't say that on it anymore.
Right. So that's who they want to make us into, the number. And that's exactly what the Jesuits did. Well, they numbered all the people in Auschwitz. And so that was a forerunner of the numbering of the American people. And the ones who were involved in keeping tabs on all this was IBM.
Huh.
And IBM was totally controlled by the Vatican through Thomas J. Watson, and IBM provided the decoupage machines, the census-taking machines for the SS, to find where all the Jews were in Europe so they could round them up.
Why do they want to kill everyone?
Well, they want to kill what they call heretics and liberals. They want to kill those of us who believe the Bible is the final authority of faith and practice, because a Bible-reading people cannot be defeated. Cannot be subdued. And what I mean by Bible reading is I mean the Reformation Bible, the AV 1611, or the Geneva Bible, if you want to go there. But all these other Bibles are pro-Vatican, pro-Council of Trent, and so the people have lost their power over the Vatican by reading these Bibles. So they don't want anybody reading the Bible, and when you do, you become a heretic, and an obstinate heretic, and therefore they call for your death pursuant to the Jesuit oath. If you're a Roman Catholic...
Yeah, but they want to kill people that don't read the Bible.
That's true. And these people are called liberals. And liberals believe in limited government. Liberals believe that the government should only be able to do what is expressly delegated to them in a written constitution. And apart from that, they can't do anything. Well, the Jesuits are the great absolutists. And that's why they call the U.S. Constitution a document of Satan. Which I have that notarized in my...
Amazing.
So, and then they want to kill the Jews, the racial Jews, because the racial Jews have promises yet to inherit that were given to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And so the preservation of the race is happening so that they can ultimately inherit these promises of the Davidic kingdom and so on. So
yeah, but it's a dark, dark thing. And I mean, to me, it's black as white. It's an evil expression. It has nothing to do with anything friendly.
Agreed. Totally agreed. But when you become imbibed in the spiritual exercises of Ignatius Loyola, you begin to adopt these beliefs, and that is what dictates your response. For example, I'll read something to you if you like.
Please.
Here's James A. Wiley, 1878, Scottish Protestant historian, history of Protestantism and Jesuits. But the Jesuit monarchy covers the globe. At its head, as we have said, is a sovereign who rules over all, but is himself ruled over by no one. From his chamber in Rome, the eye of the general surveys the world of Jesuitism to its farthest bounds. There is nothing done in it which he does not see. There is nothing spoken in it which he does not hear. He goes on and says, thus, to the general of the Jesuits, the world lies naked and open. He sees by a thousand eyes. He hears by a thousand ears. And when he has a behest to execute, he can select the fittest agent from an innumerable host, all of whom are ready to do his bidding. So, that's the power of the order, and that's their maxim, is absolute obedience. And if you see the old movie with Glenn Ford in it, called The Brotherhood of the Bell, which is really low-level Jesuits there, they call for absolute, unquestioning obedience.
Amazing.
And that's how these secret societies work and are so successful.
All right, look, Eric, we got to take one more break, okay?
Okay.
Everybody, Eric John Phelps, remarkable stuff he's got going, and sharing with us tonight. Take a look at his website, Vatican Assassins, ASSASSINS.org, and he has a book of the same name, a whole bunch of peripheral material, and worthy of investigation, certainly. And, wow, all right, let's take one more quick one here. And play another song from Mankind Liberation Front. This one's called Invasion of the Body Snatchers. We'll be back in a minute. It's Mike Kalish to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia. On the web, KOPN.org and MIKEHAGAN.com.
Expected you to be. Pack up and leave. send your saucers back home. This is nothing like we wanted you to be. Who would have thought that our visitors would be a such a lovely race?
This is scary but exciting, ain't it the truth? All right, it's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia. We have Eric John Phelps on the line with us. Has been with us for an hour and a half. We appreciate him sticking up late in the night on the East Coast there. And, Eric, we've got about 15 minutes or so to sort of finish things up, and I certainly think now we need to talk about 9/11 and, you know, sort of the news of the day, as it were. What happened on 9/11 in your view?
The World Trade Center was built to be brought down.
Yeah. I laugh because I interviewed a guy named Paul Laffoley who was an architect that was on the design team in the early 1960s, and he said that it was built that way. Go ahead.
Yeah, and there was an architect who called me out of Boston. And he said, "We never welded any of the X bracing."
Yeah, that's Paul Laffoley. He's the guy I interviewed.
Okay,
got to be the
Laffoley.
Same guy. He's in Boston. Yeah.
Yes.
He's a wonderful artist and an amazing architect.
Great.
Remarkable. I've interviewed him.
Wonderful.
And we weren't talking politics. It came out in the middle of us talking about art and creativity.
Yeah. Huh. Well, they built it to come down, just like they built Titanic to be sunk. And they had, of course, a series of detonations there, and then they had a special weapon in the basement. Probably a couple of them that were most likely a small mini nuke. And when they brought down the World Trade Center, it fell faster than would have normally fallen in free fall. So that's another evidence that it was done from the inside. And by the way, there is a professor at Brigham Young University.
Mm-hmm. Stephen Jones, I think his name is.
Mr. Jones, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I understand that President Bush took a trip to Salt Lake City and spoke with the Masonic Mormon prophet who served the Jesuit order. And out of that conversation, that physicist was told to stand down and not tell the story anymore. So they brought the World Trade Center down, and then they blamed it on the Muslims. Of course, they just used these airplanes. They guided them in. There weren't any Muslims on the airplanes. There were nobody on the airplanes. There was nobody there. And then this gave the justification to bring down these buildings.
Just a magic show, though.
Magic show, that's right. And, of course, they don't want to talk about building number 7 at all. Because why did that come down?
Mm-hmm.
Why was that imploded? So?
Right. It was built the same way, Laffoley said.
Sure. Oh, I see. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Great. Okay, so they brought it down, and so they could blame it on the Muslims. And we also have to remember that the Saudis that were here were high-level Masons. I mean, the king of Saudi Arabia is a Mason. And so he worked in conjunction with George Bush to make it appear that the Saudis and that the Muslims were really involved in this. Kind of like a black cockroach walking across a white rug.
Hmm.
And then with Hannity and Combs and
all
those
game,
other
right?
Servants of the Pope at Fox News, and they beat the war drum. And now they have their crusade into the Middle East. So just like Pearl Harbor, FDR and Hirohito were behind it. Same way with the World Trade Center. George Bush, by the way, who went to the Pope about 30 days before bringing down the World Trade Center to get his marching orders. And
that was still John Paul II. That was before Ratzinger, right?
That's right. John Paul II brought down the World Trade Center. A wonderful man. We're all told how wonderful he was.
Yeah.
And, of course, Bush and bin Laden worked together. So that's what we have. And what appears to me is, because they work together at the top. The CIA is subject to the Vatican along with the FBI and so on. They're going to do exactly what the Jesuits want. So even as they stunted, they staged this demolition of the World Trade Center and blamed it on the Muslims. They're going to destroy Mecca and Medina and blame it on the Americans. And when they do that, there will be jihad against America forever.
So this is the ultimate goal, you think? Is just this ultimate war between Islam? I mean, it's just an extension of the Crusades of 1,000 years ago.
That's correct. It's a crusade of the historical Protestant West, because this will be the final undoing of it. Remember, all Protestantism now is apostate. They don't read the Bible. They don't believe in the infallible inerrant Word of God. So, because Protestantism apostate, its political governments cannot be sustained. And so now they will be destroyed here, and the Jesuits are going to use what I say in my book, a triple Sino-Soviet Muslim invasion, culminating it towards the end of this crusade after they finish using our American military to destroy and kill the Muslims that they want to kill.
So you think that the United States potentially could be invaded?
Absolutely. It's already being practiced by the Chinese in the Straits of Formosa. And there's an agreement between the Russians and the Chinese where they've united with their navies. And there's a secret arrangement between the Japanese and their huge navy with China. They're preparing for an invasion. That's why they gave Cuba to Castro, because Cuba will be a staging base into the invasion of the historic Protestant South. So, yes. And that's why they set up their Guantanamo there in Cuba, so that the Muslim world can say, look what they're doing to our people, torturing them in Guantanamo. We need to go there and liberate them. So, and then the other interesting thing is that China and Mauritania and the nation above Mauritania, I forget the nation, Senegal, they have commercial agreements with the Red Chinese, the Costco Shipping. And the senior honorary advisor for Costco is Knight of Malta, Kennedy assassin, Alexander Haig, whose brother Francis is a powerful Jesuit.
Remarkable. What about Rudolph Giuliani?
Giuliani was involved in the World Trade demolition. He's an Malta.
He almost had to be.
Absolutely. Just like Pataki. They were all involved. And because they were all subject to the Archbishop of New York. And they made a hero out of him so they could run for president. And so Giuliani was a part of it, yes. And nobody's going to jail, and nobody's going to be prosecuted, because the Jesuits run the Attorney General, like Alberto Gonzalez and others, and they will not go there. And any U.S. attorney that really wants to prosecute, like this Chinese gal in California, Lam, Carol Lam, mm-hmm. You know, she just handed down an indictment of the third most powerful individual of the CIA.
Yeah, and they threw her out.
They threw her out.
Quickly.
Quickly. And another guy that handed down an indictment, one of the nation's largest military-industrial contractors, they threw him out, too.
Mm-hmm.
So I encourage all the U.S. attorneys to do exactly what they want to do, to leave people alone who refuse to file tax returns on wages, because wages are not income, and go after these corporate fascist monsters that are controlled by the Vatican.
Boy, I'm with you there, I'll tell you that much. Well, you know, there's a tremendous amount of difficulty in those positions, and people get involved in things they have no idea what they're in, you know what I mean? And all of a sudden it's like, oh no. So let's talk about, and this may be a little bit of a left turn, but I talk to lots of different people on the program, and lots of them are sort of science minded, and you know, we talk about technology and advancement of you know, just change in general, and how quickly things seem to be changing, as opposed to, you know, maybe, I don't know, you know, years ago or whatever. But it seems to me that there must be some sort of urgency now, because the availability of information for the average person is increasing all the time. The proliferation of technology, whether you like it or not, is slowly but surely making it into the hands of people who might be able to do whatever they want with it. Those are obviously things that are liberating to the individual, which is something that is not wanted by these big institutions. What do you think is? Do you think they're going to clamp down quickly?
I have no doubt. That,
I mean, are we in the middle of it already? I guess.
Yes, we're in the middle of it. With the Patriot Act, pursuant to my friend, attorney friend John Levy, who has that Vatican Bank case going in California. He says the Patriot Act gutted the Constitution. All it has to do is really be enforced. So we have essentially lost our rights. And the Patriot Act was written by not only Michael Chertoff, that Masonic Jew, but also it was written by Dinh Viet, who is a Roman Catholic Vietnamese assistant attorney general and a professor at Jesuit Georgetown University. The Jesuits wrote the Patriot Act, had it in place after 9/11, to foist upon a Congress, and not one congressman read it.
Mm-hmm. I know that. Yeah.
So that's another reason to secede. You have overthrown our Bill of Rights. We're leaving.
You know, you mentioned Vietnam, and Southeast Asia was another instance of this for sure, because, and you know, in my day life, I work with lots of people that are from Vietnam, and they are all Catholic.
That's right.
Because they were, and they didn't, they, and most of them were not born that way.
Right. Well, you know, the Saigon military mission, its purpose was to scare the Roman Catholics of the North to go south. And Fletcher Prouty mentions this in his work, JFK. And so they used the American Navy to ship these people to the south of Vietnam so that what was in the North were primarily Buddhists. And so, therefore, all the mass Argolite bombing was killing Buddhists, heretic and liberal infidel Buddhists, while the majority of the Catholic population was in the south, and then after the Crusade, they took over the government. The religious issue always dominates the political issue and the economic issue.
Yeah, because they don't even recognize those political boundaries or anything, for the most part.
Right.
That's all shtick.
Right. And then we left lots of our military hardware to the Vietnamese people so they can continue their inquisition against the Laotians and others. So the whole Cold War was an inquisition financed and made possible by this 14th Amendment, Holy Roman American Empire, with its central bank, the Federal Reserve Bank. And in the killing of these Buddhists, we are guilty. The killing of the Soviet people and the Russian people were Orthodox. We are guilty because, you know, Felix Dzerzhinsky was overseen by Sidney Reilly of MI6. And then ultimately the KGB and the CIA have been working together, as Anthony K. Brown shows, with Angleton and Gallitzin. So all these things, the killing of the Chinese, the killing of the Russian people, was ultimately the fault of the American people because we let this government do it. So it's another reason to secede.
There's a person who writes on the chat page here, Catholics are attempting to wipe out Buddhism all over Asia.
Well, it makes sense because that's what the mass murder of the Tibetans was all about.
My God, 1950s, yeah.
Right, we never told anything about that. But
oh, I mean, yeah. I mean, and this was ridiculous. Mm-hmm. I mean, they bombed, literally just bombed huge monasteries, 5,000, 6,000 monks, just destroyed them.
Right. And is it an interesting communism? Jesuit communism was always against Buddhism. Because they wanted, and then they got control of the Dalai Lama. He's a high-level Mason.
Is that right?
Oh, yeah. When I had a friend go to Georgetown University because I wanted a picture there that was on the wall in the president's office.
Mm-hmm.
The picture was Billy Clinton on his knees at the grave of the Jesuit president, Timothy Healy, and behind him was Leo J. O'Donovan. And I desperately wanted that picture to put in my book. Well, I couldn't have it, and so this lady friend of mine went there to get it because she has a niece that attends there.
Mm-hmm.
And when she got there, she said, absolutely not, you cannot have this picture. Why do you want this? Well, the purpose was that the Jesuits controlling Georgetown University were behind the Vietnam massacre with Nixon and Johnson. In fact, Mao Zedong said to Nixon when Nixon went to China, you are just as evil as I am. because Nixon was leading the fascists, and Mao was leading the communists. And see, fascism and communism always works together at the top. And so the end of the Nazi Germany was taken over with the Nazis in America. And the communism of Russia continued with the communism in Russia and China. So they continued their mass murder of heretics and liberals and Orthodox peoples and German Lutherans in East Germany and Latvia and so on, because it was all done pursuant to the Council of Trent.
All right, so where does it leave us?
I call for individual men and women to truly repent of their sins and believe the gospel that Christ died for our sins according to the scriptures, he was buried and rose again, he's coming back. And whosoever believeth on him should not perish but have everlasting life. Once you do that, you're now saved, you have the power to resist these men.
All right, well,
the next thing is secession. We have to secede. This will send a message to all the other nations that we are not putting up with this anymore.
Hmm. All right, really quickly, because a couple of people have asked, personally, what's your own, could you just summarize your belief system as far as your own position?
I believe that Jesus Christ was the Son of God. He died for my sins according to the Scriptures. He was buried and rose again and coming back. And that my final authority for faith and practice is the Bible, namely the Reformation Bible, the AV 1611, with its underlying Greek and Hebrew text. And that my first allegiance is to Him as He's revealed in His Word, not to any particular organized church. And although I do call myself a Baptist and a Calvinist, they're not the typical Baptist and Calvinist of today, that I'm referring to historical Baptist and historical Calvinists. So, but the bottom line is, I believe the basic doctrines of the Bible as far as salvation by grace through faith, and that not of myself, it's a gift of God. And encourage others to believe the same, in that this is the times of the Gentiles, and it will end in the not too distant future, then God will deal with Israel and the nations together for the 70th week of Daniel, and then ultimately the millennial reign of Christ on earth.
All right. Couple more minutes here. Where does Dubai fit into this? There's this big company, Halliburton, just moved to Dubai.
Yeah. Dubai is the huge economic center of the Muslim world.
You ever seen this place? They built an actual, like, gigantic island resort living compound there. They call it the Palm. They're actually building outrageous things right in the middle of the ocean there.
Really? I've never seen
it. Oh, you gotta see this thing to believe it.
Okay, I'll check it out.
Yeah.
But, of course, Dubai Ports World controls all of our ports. And Halliburton, of course, the Knights of Malta run Dubai Ports World. The Knights of Malta run Halliburton. And by the way, it's no coincidence that Halliburton has left Houston and has moved to Dubai.
Oh, no.
They know that there's going to be a detonation. So, that's what I see in the future.
Well, all right. Well, I cannot tell you how much I appreciate you sharing everything that you've shared with us, Eric.
I can't tell you how much you're someone who is willing to seek it out, because that doesn't happen very much.
All right. Well, we did it, and we'll let people make of it what they will. But I'm glad you had a chance to air it out, and I wish you the best of luck. And what do you have plans for yourself?
I finished the book. And I'm going to work on health matters, because the whole FDA and is an inquisition against the health of the American people.
So, I agree with you fully.
So I'm working to stop that and help people recover from natural therapies and things.
Hmm. All right. Well, we talk a lot about that on the program here too. So.
Well, it's an inquisition.
All right. We'll leave it at that, and we'll stay in touch, and take care of yourself, and we'll talk again, okay?
Okay, thanks, Mike, and thank you for your listening.
You bet, everybody. It's been Eric John Phelps. He can be gotten in touch with, certainly, and you can also find much information on his website at VaticanAssassins.org. You'll be able to link there from my site from here on out, and we'll get this radio program up in the archives here as soon as we can. And you can download it, listen again. A lot of information in here for sure. And share it with others if you think it warrants, okay? All right, it is, well, we got about 4 minutes left. I'm going to bail out of here. with one last one from our friends, the Mankind Liberation Front. And the song is called History. Come on back next week. We'll have a little something special for our friend Terrence Kemp McKenna. Died on April 3rd, 2000. It'll be 7 years next week. And we'll do something special for T. In the meantime, take care of yourselves, all right? Pay attention. And enjoy yourselves as well, all right? What else are you going to do in the middle of all this? It's Mike. You've been listening to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia. This is called History, Mankind, Liberation Front. Talk to you all next week. Thanks again one more time to Eric John Phelps on the web, VaticanAssassins.org, and me, Mike Hagan, HAGAN.com.
Every word we say was said in the past.